Listen, I love podcasting. Who doesn't? The process is great until you get to the part where you have to edit and distribute your podcast. It's time-consuming, and we all love convenience. Well, here's the most convenient option possible. It's called Anchor. There's creation tools in the app that will allow you to record and edit right from your phone, tablet, or computer. It will distribute your podcast for you on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other popular platforms. You can make money from your podcast with minimum listenership, and it's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. So go to the free Anchor app or anchor.fm right now to get started. And trust me, you won't regret it.
It literally like lagged so bad, it like paused the whole feed.
Oh, wow.
And I missed the shot, like right as he's pulling up. So it's just, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, in life and in basketball, a lot of it just comes down to right place, right time. Welcome back, everybody, to Business Casual Basketball Podcast. So this is it. After six eventful weeks, we find ourselves at the end of the road for the 2018 Division Preview Series. We've taken an interesting route across the league, but we ended up landing on arguably the most competitive division in the league. So this was done by design, and now we get to finish things off with the five teams that all, I guess you could say, have a realistic shot of making the playoffs, but I would say definitely, going off of last season, had a cumulative best record. In terms of all the divisions here. So before we get started here, I'd like to introduce my special guest for today. This is his fourth time getting on the pod here. It's going to be Shane Young. He does a lot of great work, a lot of different sites. He's been on B-Ball Breakdown. Anything you could think of, he's there. And he's got a lot in the works, so keep an eye on him. But Shane, appreciate you coming on for this division preview, man.
My man Aaron, fourth time on your pod. You've been on my pod two or three. Well, whatever you want to call what I do. But thanks for the kind words, and I'm back, and we're ready to talk about the best, I hate the best division. It's just the most competitive division in basketball.
Yeah, it's no matter how you slice it, it's a lot of action could be going down here. So we're going to get started here, and we're going to kick things off with one team that narrowly missed the playoffs last season, but if any our projections are correct, that's not going to be the case this time around because they're loaded with talent. They have a lot going on there. So this is going to be Mile High City, Denver Nuggets. Valiant effort last season. Saw them fall short of the postseason by one game. The play-in game against the Timberwolves, couldn't get it done. But it's very likely they would have found a way to get in if Millsap has stayed healthy. Got to remember, he only played 38 games. So if he had been healthy for, let's say, 60-plus, it could have been a different story. This is a great team right here, Shane. They have a lot going for them, a young core, fantastic offense. Even though their defense is a little sketchy, they are one of the most fun teams to watch. And I'm sure most of us have the Denver Nuggets in the top five of league pass rankings. So they're just that explosive.
Yeah, I to ruin one of my parts of my preview coming out, I have Denver. I do like a league pass rankings on each team subheading in my piece, and I don't go into detail on it, I just write the number where they're ranked, but for me they're third right behind Golden State and Philadelphia. There is no other team in basketball other than those two that you would rather sit down and watch if you're trying to learn the game, and I think we all know that. The only people that don't know that are the people that don't watch Denver, but
right,
ridiculous play at home, man. Like, they are always so good at home, it's unreal.
It is. I mean, that's a great home court advantage there. We all know about the altitude in Denver. That obviously makes for a natural advantage there. But even aside from that, they just love playing at home. They have great fans. It's a great atmosphere there. They love to get up and down the court. And a deeper dive into the numbers further reveals this difference that they have in offensive defense here. I mean, we talked about their offense already. They were fifth in assists per game, so they have no problems moving the ball around. You can contribute a lot of that to Millsap and Jokic. Those guys move the ball as well as any front court in the league. They were second in offensive rebounding, seventh in three-point percentage, and eighth in two-point percentage. So they're an efficient team all around. They move the ball. They get great shots. And when you have a backcourt like Gary Harris and Jamal Murray, those guys can get hot in an instant. And one of the games for last season that comes up in my memory was the one against OKC. I believe it was in February there when they were making a run to the playoffs. And Jamal Murray just caught fire. He was dishing out punishment to the whole team there. Steven Adams kind of lost his life in that game, going stumbling to the ground, step backs, anything you could think of. So Jamal Murray is definitely the centerpiece of this team. Right after Jokic there, it's a great 1-2 punch, and they create highlights on the highest level night in and night out. You can't dispute that.
Yeah, Aaron, I know you, I think I saw, was it on Twitter or Instagram, you were going back and watching that Gary Harris buzzer beater game.
Instagram, yeah.
And the thing is, I really went in depth on that game as well, and that is the game that to me was a microcosm of what Jamal Murray was. It wasn't the point totals, it wasn't anything in the box score that really illustrated to me. It was how crafty he was finishing around the rim. Mm-hmm. Like there were some finishes in that game in particular, like that February game alone, that you know, it really just showed me if this guy is able to attack and finish, use the glass the way he does, like he can go either with either hand. I feel like, I mean, some people might disagree with that, but I saw a lot of interesting finishes around the rim for him, and that only gets better when you add another year of playing with the best passer in basketball, the best big man passer in basketball.
Yeah.
So like, imagine like LeBron. If LeBron played with, let's just say, an average player in the league, I don't know. Let's just say LeBron played with the most average player in the league for 10 years. That guy would be so efficient by year 8, 9, 10 that because he's benefiting from LeBron, but LeBron's never had a long-term teammate like that. It seems like Jokic and Jamal Murray and Gary Harris are going to be together for the length of their next contracts and the contract after that. So once they get Murray locked up, which I believe is when, next year?
I would say, yeah, next year he should be eligible to get extended.
Yeah, so it's like those three are going to be together for a long time. This guy's only going to get better in terms of finishing and having the best alleyways to the rim.
Yeah, I love the progress he's making in his career so far. He shot up to 37% on threes, almost 38%. That was one more attempt per game. Definitely coming in clutch with those percentages there. His free throw shooting is elite. He's 90% free throw shooter. Almost tops in the league, so you can't foul this guy when he's going to the rim. If you do, it's almost automatic. He's up there in the tier of Steph Curry's and J.J. Redick's in terms of free throw shooting. He just doesn't miss, which is fantastic, and you want to see a guy shoot that well at his position. But when he's that elite from the free throw line, I mean, there's not much you can do. I mean, you close out, he's getting to the rim. He's at least getting free throw attempts. They're going in. Not too spectacular an assist for Jamal Murray, but it's not a big deal because you have Jokic on the team to take on those responsibilities in the high post, hitting guys off the cut. Jamal and Gary love to cut. That's another thing about them. They move great off the ball. They're not just standing around like a Westbrook or LeBron would do. They keep things going. They keep the action going. And it's fantastic to see how Jokic is developing with these guys. You alluded to it a little bit earlier, but the synergy is awesome, and we can't discount the value of continuity in this league. You have guys that stick around for a while, they get to know each other's games, and everybody kind of elevates each other. You know, the competitiveness in practice, the synergy in games, finding guys off the cut, going to the three-point line, that's fantastic. And diving into Jokic's numbers, I mean, he's improved quite a bit as well. He signed that extension, maximum there, rightly so. And it's because of his offense. We know it's not because of the defense. He probably has cinder blocks for feet. So, you know, it's not going to be on that end where he gets his value. It's offense. The 28.6 assist percentage, that's the 98th percentile in the league. He's a great shooter from all over the court. 57% from the corner, that's also 98th percentile. And the team as a whole is 9.7 points per 100 possessions better on offense when he's on the court. I mean, he contributes in so many areas in offense, pretty much every area. So you got to have this guy on the court, and he pays dividends when he's out there, no matter who's around him. He makes everybody better, as a great passer should do.
Yeah, Nikola Jokic is definitely still underrated by people. Like just I would say the general public underrates Jokic because they look at how he plays, and, you know, he's not that physical compared to maybe a guy in the post like Karl Towns. But I always laugh when people think that it's such a big discrepancy between Towns and Jokic. I mean, really, they do things differently, but they do it equally as valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys are neck and neck in the top 20, top 15 players in the league. To me, Jokic's top 15. Probably the second best center behind JoJo from Philadelphia. So Jokic is going to definitely live up to that contract. Like, I'm so glad they signed that in a hurry and that did not linger. I mean, you know, he wants to be there. Zach Lowe has mentioned this, and I think it's hilarious that Nikola Jokic could not care less where he plays. He could play in Louisville, Kentucky, mm-hmm. and he would not care, man. He just wants to play basketball. Yeah. And Jokic has even said before, like, he'd be perfectly happy with playing professionally back home as long as he made this kind of money. Like, you know, the market doesn't matter. Really, the money doesn't matter. It's just, you know, Denver's a great place. It's been great to him. The coaching staff loves him. And, you know, Mike Malone, I'm glad he didn't get fired. He could have easily got fired. Not last year, because it was understandable, but the year before when they had all that talent and really just underperformed.
Mm-hmm. Jokic is, he has the potential to be one of the greatest second-round picks of all time. He was selected 41st overall, which is pretty incredible, and I think we forget about that. I mean, Towns was number one. Jokic was all the way back in the latter half of the draft. You know, he came in and immediately made a difference for this team. There was that kind of growing pain period when they had him and Nurkic kind of sharing the front court, but they quickly realized that wasn't going to work, and Jokic got the reins to the offense, and it's been upward trajectory for them ever since. So that's amazing value you're getting from the second round. You know, and Gary and Jamal, I mean, neither of them were top five picks either. So you got to think from a value proposition, Denver has done a great job of building this team without having top three, top five picks. They haven't really tanked going back. I mean, they haven't dropped below 30 wins. You know, they didn't do anything crazy to get these guys. They just, you know, competed, didn't have the talent, lost some games. And here they are with this great core. So going forward, they have some great veterans around them. You have Millsap, and they moved on from Darrell Arthur, Wilson, Chandler, and Fareed. But as long as you have Millsap around, that's going to be great for the starting lineup. He's looking to have a full healthy season. Hopefully he does, because we know how much of a difference maker he is on both ends of the court. Even though he's getting older, he still makes a fantastic impact there. And he's still on a great contract, I would say, because next year is a team option, which is awesome. So if he does end up being a little more injury prone than what is initially expected here, then they can kind of cut ties with him. But I would doubt that happens. I know I'd expect him to have a bounce back season and kind of do the dirty work for the Nuggets. Just be a guy they can rely on and be a really good fit next to Will Barton, who projects to be the other starter here. Will Barton on his new deal. He's got the new money, but he shouldn't have any kind of drop off there. Will Barton's a gamer. Will the Thrill. Love the way this guy plays. You know, he plays super hard every night. He brings it, and he's gotten better every year. And I'm almost certain that the Portland Trail Blazers are kicking themselves for letting this guy go. You know, of course, he didn't display the signs that he is now and doing the things on the court. But I mean, you look at Portland's wing rotation. We'll get to them here in a minute. It's kind of lacking here. So a guy like Will Barton would do wonders for them. But in any case, fantastic player here, sixth man or starter. He does the same thing for this team. So ultimately, I would expect Denver to take a nice jump this season. You know, they should be in the playoffs. I'm struggling to kind of project exactly where they're going to be. I've gone between 5 and 6 in the conference.
It's
yeah, but either way, I'm not quite sure.
I was going to ask you, if I told you, or if I asked you right now, who led the 2017-18 Denver Nuggets in total minutes played, what would your answer be?
Total minutes played, I would, I mean, my natural reaction would be Jokic, but not
Will
exactly
Barton.
Sure. Will Barton.
Will Barton played 2,600 minutes, almost 2,700, 81 games, played more than Murray, that's interesting.
Yeah.
And Jokic obviously missed 7 games.
Right.
And all the other guys had little nagging injuries. But, I mean, Will Barton, that a lot of people have really, like, told me, trying to convince me that maybe it's not a good thing that Barton's going to be in the starting lineup. He needs to be off the bench. But, look, I'm just a firm believer in continuity. I'm a firm believer in chemistry that, like, on the court. And that's their best five.
Definitely.
And you want to go – you want to start with your best five, get out to a good lead. You want to finish with your best five. I think that's going to be your finishing five. I don't see any reason why I'm sure you were going to bring up Isaiah Thomas, but I don't see any good reason why he would be on the court in the fourth quarter when it matters. I mean, if you're down 7 or 8 and you want him to spark a boost, I can see replacing someone with Isaiah, but here are the essentials. We can agree these are the essential nuggets on the court. You cannot replace them in closing time. Jokic, Harris, Murray, and Millsap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, you can't put them on the bench unless Millsap just doesn't have it this year. If he's a little bit older, I think he's 33. I'm not sure what Millsap is. 33, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, that fourth spot is going to come down between what they need most. And I think Will Barton just has it all. He has it all both ways. He's 28. Again, I said play the most minutes last year. Continuity is going to matter in these situations. And the Nuggets struggle to finish games with wins.
Yep.
And I think that he is going to be the guy, going to be the glue, going to be what they need to get them over that 49-win hump.
That's the word right there, the glue guy. That's a perfect way to – it encapsulates what Will brings to this team, and he's done it for a few years now. So we should expect that to continue. And, you know, the win total could fluctuate a little bit here, but – ultimately, they should be in the playoffs. They should be right in the hunt to make some noise in the postseason, as they should have been last year. So it'll be great to see them in the playoffs, because this offense, this dynamic playmaking center they have, their dynamic guards, shooting, we need to see that in the postseason. No matter who they play, it's going to be a lot of fireworks. It's going to be fun. So can't wait to see that unfold.
Yeah, one more thing, though, that I wanted to bring up about the Denver Nuggets is, I was going to get your opinion on Millsap. I mean, do you think that you think they can really continue where they left off with, because they were really good with Millsap on the court in March and April whenever he came back.
Right.
Whenever, obviously, they struggled a little bit in December or November, December, and it really got kicking off in January. But Millsap was gone by then, right? Like, when they went on their streak, he wasn't playing because he hurt his, was his thumb or wrist? I think it was a, So, like, he was out of the lineup completely. But this is really interesting that on the court, when Paul Millsap played, they were a league-average defense. They were about 18th, 107 defensive rating when Millsap was on the court.
Interesting.
When he wasn't, it was 109.5. That's Cleveland Cavaliers' 29th overall level. So, like, as long as he's there, they're going to be a top-5 offense and a top I struggle to say they could be top 18 again with Isaiah playing 1,000 minutes or 800 minutes, whatever he plays. But if they can be 20th, that's a good net rating to get you wins. And that's something like what the Jazz are, the opposite. The Jazz are the top 3 defense and the top 20 offense. So, I mean, they can just be a complete inverse of the Jazz this year, and that'll get you wins because offense wins in the NBA.
That's right. If you're elite in a certain area of the court and you can at least be decent in the other, that's going to do wonders for you, and it's going to show up in the win column. So Denver's got that going for them. So love what Denver's doing. They have a great future. A team with a kind of uncertain future right now, very cloudy as far as their direction, is Minnesota Timberwolves. They're probably the team that people are talking about the most right now, making the most headlines because of Jimmy Butler, obviously. They're another highly imbalanced team that prioritized offense a lot more than defense, similar to the Denver Nuggets. They also followed in Cleveland's footsteps in that regard. So you're looking at what they did last season. I mean, they had a top-5 offense, very good on that end of the floor. We can see why. When you have guys like Towns and, Wiggins, for all his warts, is a good scorer, I would say, on the court, and he can do some good things for you over there, but I mean, they were so dynamic, and I would say it's not because of the system or anything. I would just say it's strictly because of talent that they were able to acquire the fourth best offense in the league, offensive rating. That's what got them to the postseason. Certainly not their defense, which was 27th. So it's very odd to see a Tibbs coach team, Tom Thibodeau coach team, struggle to stop the ball. I mean, obviously, the coaching can't do everything. You know, it comes down to personnel. And in that regard, Wiggins and Towns definitely dropped the ball there. The Timberwolves as a team allowed 67% shooting at the rim, and that's pretty bad. But 53.4% on two-pointers in general, just everywhere inside the arc. So, you know, 29th in that regard when it comes to the some of the easiest shots in the game, that's not good. You know, that's not going to reflect well on your defense. So I don't understand why. I mean, Towns has all the tools to be an effective defender. I was watching a preseason game the other night. I think he deflected a pass on the fast break. He recovered and got a block off the backboard. I mean, he's pretty athletic. He's quick for his size. He's got long arms. I don't understand why he can't be a great defender, or at least an average one. I'm hoping that turns around. I still have hope for him. For Wiggins, though, I'm not sure. I could throw around a lot of jokes right now when it comes to Wiggins. Not having any heart would be one of them. You know, kind of going back on Steven Jackson's comment on him. But his defensive stats across the board are just not good. I mean, in every area of the court, Minnesota gets worse when it comes to stopping the ball. So he's got to take more pride in being a two-way player. You know, he got paid, he got his deal, but I want to see him find some kind of motivation to be good on the other end of the floor. You know, you need that on a team like this, especially if Jimmy Butler's going to be on his way out.
You know, back in the 2014 draft, Jabari went two, Wiggins went one, I really thought that was going to be the draft, the first one in a while, that the top two picks are so dominant, so really, like, really, really good, to where they're max guys in the next 5 years and beyond that. And all we had to do was wait two more years to 2016, and we're going to see that with Ben Simmons and Brandon Ingram. We finally got our wish with that. But, you know, it's really disappointing that Jabari, number one, he couldn't stay healthy. But number two, he's still a bad defender.
Yep.
Both of these guys, Wiggins and Jabari, that 2014 top 10 draft class, are horrific defenders. But I am not giving up hope on Andrew Wiggins' ability on that end. I think it's less about the effort and more about not knowing what to do. Mm-hmm. And if it was an effort problem on defense, then that would be a lost cause. But since it's a not knowing what to do, not knowing where to go, just kind of carelessness, I would say. I wouldn't tie that with effort. I would tie that into not being coached the right way throughout his whole life. Right. But this is year three of Tom Thibodeau. And, like, right off the bat in Chicago, I don't know the numbers defensively, but I'm willing to bet they weren't, like, you know, really, really dominant defensively like his first year or so. But I think that it took a little bit. And you know, we might see that this year. We might see Towns take a step forward. We might see Wiggins take a step forward defensively. Only Minnesota fans can hope, because it has not looked good in the preseason. That's just putting it mildly. I think you referenced it too. Like, if that's any indication of what they're heading for this year, then they might be lucky to be, like, sniffing the playoffs.
Yeah.
But you brought up something about the offense, and it's hilarious. It's remarkable that they scored 110.8 points per 100 possessions whenever they shot the fewest threes in the league. That's criminally insane to me. I don't understand how that's even possible.
It really is.
And because they took 16.9 above the break threes per game. So take out the corner threes. They only pulled up for 17 threes, whether it's a pull-up shot or a catch-and-shoot three. That's not enough. No. League leaders are 28, 29, 30. And, you know, Minnesota didn't hit a bad percentage of them. They were league average, a little bit below league average, but where their bread was buttered, what ironically is the in-the-paint, non-restricted area. So within 6 feet to 12 feet, like in between the free throw line. And what that shows me is Towns' post positions, you know, Wiggins' floaters, which are hideous, but they drop sometimes. Yeah. I mean, he's not a bad offensive player by any means.
For sure.
And Jimmy Butler has that game, that little mid-inside game. And Derrick Rose, obviously, this year, he's going to play a lot more minutes for them. I can't say I'm rooting for him to have a good year, though. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'm just not a Derrick Rose fan. This team has a lot of question marks. I'm so confused. I don't know if you heard the podcast where they talked about the most confusing teams. This wasn't even one of their most confusing teams. And, like, if Jimmy Butler's not there, which he's not going to be, I don't know what it looks like. Because you'd have to go back to 2016-17 to see kind of what it does look like. But even then, all the personnel has changed. Taj Gibson's on the team now. Derrick Rose is out of that team. And I hate to break it to you, fans. I think that that 2016-17 squad won 31 games.
Mm.
So, you know, they're going to have to bet. They're going to have to bet big on Towns becoming the best center in the NBA this year. If he is,
yeah,
it really lifts them up to where they're not going to win the division, but it helps them be competitive because this is the Northwest Division. You have to play the Blazers 4 times, the Jazz 4 times, Nuggets, Oklahoma City.
That's rough.
I cannot tell you how many. They're going to go on a lot of losing streaks. I definitely sense a 7 or 8 game losing streak somewhere in there for Minnesota.
I can see that. I can definitely see that. And it's crazy because last season they were actually in solid position to get a playoff spot. I think they had a top 4 seed in January.
Yeah.
January 14th, they were 29-16. And then they lost Jimmy, and it was kind of just downhill from there. So when Jimmy was healthy and he was contributing to this team, you know, his stats are awesome. He's a great finisher.
See what their record – I didn't mean to interrupt you. See what their record was – during that Rockets game, the one where Jimmy got hurt. I don't know what day it was. It was after the All-Star break, so it was after February 19th. Look for the Rockets. What was their record there?
March 18th? I think it was
– yeah.
They were 40-31 after that loss.
Yeah, that's when they lost Jimmy. I mean,
yeah.
And all they needed to do was win about 7 games, and that's what they did.
Yeah. So, I mean, from that point on, they couldn't get it done. They couldn't make enough progress there. So they had the blueprint there. They had the foundation. They had the momentum to get a spot. Obviously, losing Jimmy Butler, you know, best player on the team, that doesn't help you. But still, I mean, you were positioned to get that, and they couldn't get it done. So now we step forward to this offseason, and it's been a complete circus with this Jimmy Butler trade demand. So, I mean, it's hilarious to me, first of all, that Thibodeau has tried to assemble the Timberwolves here. You know, he got Taj Gibson, Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose. There were rumors swirling around. He was trying to get Joakim Noah. I know, of course, I don't know if that was really legitimate. It might have just been noise there. But trying to build this whole squad. Luol Deng is also on the squad now. It's pretty funny to think about that. It's the reincarnated version of the 10-11 Bulls. So that's obviously not working out in their favor.
In a wheelchair up there.
Basically. You know, he ran Luol Deng into the ground there. So I don't know. I guess Luol Deng is just like, hey, I mean, I'm on my last legs anyway. I might as well play for a coach that I know and, you know, play with some guys that I've vibe with in my career. So that makes sense when you think of it like that. But this is dragging on, and I didn't think it would happen this way. You know, Thibodeau, the management there, they're trying to get too much out of these teams. There's a lot of reports swirling around that they're asking for quite a lot from these other teams. And I saw something today on Twitter. One executive from one of these teams that are involved in these rumors was saying the Timberwolves are asking for the firstborn of our families, to kind of put it in context here and, you know, kind of throw a joke out there. I mean, he's asking for the house. And that's obviously just sombering these talks that they've stagnated, they've died. And the longer this draws out, the worse it is for the Timberwolves. Jimmy's not going to sign there long term. He's not going to re-sign after the season. Teams are backing away because they know they've been in serious talks with the Heat. You know, teams are probably lowering their demands. You know, the Timberwolves have no leverage here. They need to get rid of Jimmy. Everybody knows that. So it's just turning into this whole debacle. And, you know, Jimmy's going to be there to start the season. But even if Jimmy is there, I mean, you know how this goes when somebody is, you know, looking to get traded. It's just not the same in the locker room. You know, on the court can suffer. You know, maybe he's looking off guys. I mean, we don't know how exactly that's going to translate on the court, how that's going to have a domino effect. But any way you slice it, it's not a good deal. And I feel sorry for these guys because, you know, Butler was the steadying presence for them, and they don't have a great contract situation, you know, the salary cap situation to bring in guys to replace him. I mean, you got $60 million tied up in Wiggins and Towns. You have to pay Tyus Jones. You know, he's going to be restricted free agent next summer. Gorgui Dieng is still on the books for 2 more seasons after this one. So it's just not looking good for them. Best case scenario, they win 40 in the low 40s in terms of games. You know, they do okay. The defense comes up a little bit, but even then, I mean, what does that get you? Low lottery pick, and then you're not set up much better for the following season. So Timberwolves, yeah. Hopefully they get a decent return for Jimmy, but it's not looking good at this point because they've asked for too much, and they've scared off almost every team that was interested. So
I was going to say, you know what I don't understand, man, is how these are some, not everyone, but some of these coaches who are and the ones that are also acting as president or GM, they're smart people. They've been in the league for a long time. Tibbs, particularly, has been in the league since 1989 when he started out with Minnesota as an assistant. He's been around the block. He knows how things work.
Yep.
I don't understand how he is, for lack of a better phrase, is dumb enough to think that he can get more for a guy that, A, is a free agent next summer, doesn't have, you know, he can be traded to Miami and then leave Miami. That hurts the Heat.
Mm-hmm.
And B, someone that has basically ruined your leverage by saying, I want out now, and it better happen before the game start because I'm not missing any games. So Thibodeau is acting like the way he's operating right now, you would, just a random person on the street would think, oh, so Jimmy's locked up for 5 years. Mm-hmm. No, like he's a free agent in 10 months.
Yeah.
It's just mind boggling that Thibodeau is hurting his team by acting like Jimmy is just this long-term asset that Miami's going to have for the long haul. They might. He might go to Miami and resign, but the Heat don't know that. Right. Pat Riley doesn't know that. Riley thought LeBron was going to resign in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of unknowns in the air, and Tibbs had a deal. We don't know. I guess Josh Richardson was in it, the one that was going to be pulled. The one that they were going to pull the trigger on, but then I guess Tib might have said, you know, give me something else. I just don't get what's going through his mind right now. He could have had a top 50 player in Josh Richardson, but he doesn't.
Nope. He aimed way too high. And it reminds me of a scenario here. I'm going back to 2K here. I'm using 2K as an example. You know, in my career, when you start out, you have the opportunity to get your initial contract, you know, once you're signed to a team. And you have contract negotiations, and you can negotiate the amount of virtual currency you get every game. You can negotiate how many minutes you know, where you fall in the rotation, you know, how much playing time you want to get. And you can negotiate the amount of years you get. And ironically enough, I wanted to go to the Timberwolves. I felt like they were going to be a good fit for me. I'm a shooting guard, and I know I felt like I could fit into that team, you know, kind of do my thing there, you know, at least starting off on the bench. And I wanted a little bit more. I wanted some more money. I wanted some more minutes. And I pushed them. I gave them a very aggressive offer. They denied it. I tried again because I thought I was being very reasonable. I took it down a little bit. And then they just said, you know what, this is not going to work for us. We're out. They bailed.
Oh, my God.
And I was stuck with the Detroit Pistons and had a terrible season. So that's kind of like where the Timberwolves stand right now. They aimed way too high. You know, they kept asking for the whole pot. You know, they wanted Bam, Jay Rich, and a first, protected first rounder. And they scared away the Heat. And now they're left with pretty much no options because every other team was like, well, if the Heat are in talks, serious talks, then we're just going to kind of back away and revisit this again next season or something like that. So, the other teams have cap space, so they can sign him in the summer. They don't have to trade for him. So, you know, it's a bad situation, and, you know, hopefully the Timberwolves can make the most of this and get a decent return, but it's tough. It's tough. They have a long way to go.
Yeah. I'm so done with Minnesota. Like, it just kind of hurts me to even talk about them because, I really did think that was the third best team in the Western Conference last year, healthy.
Yeah.
And now they're going from third to 12th.
Something like that, yeah.
Or 11th, something like that.
Yep. Not looking good for them. But we do have a few other teams in this division that are looking a little bit better going forward. So we're going to kick it into more of an optimistic note here. Take a look at the OKC Thunder. Had a promising season last year. It did end a disappointment at the hands of the Utah Jazz, but they did finish top 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency, and there's only a handful of teams that do that every year. So that just goes to show you how talented this OKC team is. So, you know, first and foremost, we got to talk about Melo and how that went. Safe to say it was a failure of an experiment, just kind of blew up in their face. Here's some numbers, Shane, to throw at you. Melo had a career low in two-point percentage at 43.7%, career low in assists at 1.3, career low in points per shot attempt, he was in the 8th percentile among his position, worst box plus-minus among major rotation players on that team. He also drew a league-worst rate of shooting fouls and non-shooting fouls. So I looked it up, worst in his career, drawing fouls, getting to the line. That was one of his best assets. As we know, Melo is a kind of a rumble-tumble player, loves to get in the mid-range and bully guys. So he couldn't even do that very well. And it's amazing that OKC can have offense like this prominent, this explosive every year, because we all know they don't move the ball that well. They're 28th in assists again, at the bottom of the league in passes per game. But Westbrook and Paul George, so amazing. And of course, Steven Adams. You know, Steven Adams is one of the most underrated players in the NBA, in my opinion. So those three guys took care of business. We know Paul George had a rough playoff run. You know, that's unfortunate. But in the regular season, I mean, even against the Warriors, he looked fantastic, getting strips, blocks, chase down blocks, spotting up and, you know, hitting off the dribble, getting those threes to go. I mean, he looked awesome for most of the season. He was generating a little bit of buzz for Defensive Player of the Year, and that really contributed to that defense they have. OKC always has a great defense, so very great team. Finished the season on a bad note, but we can't discount the amount of success they had in the regular season. Of course, among all the ups and downs, they really made it work okay, I guess, if we're not talking about Melo. But I'm glad that Paul George is there for the long haul, and him and Westbrook can continue to develop that chemistry and see where they can go long term, see what they can do together.
You know, I don't know if we even discussed it, but that Andre Robertson setback
that hurt was
significant. He is going to miss 2 more months with, I don't even know what happened. I mean, I know the patellar tendon is what he tore and had to get surgery on, but I guess that, I don't know if they had to go back in there. I think they did have to have another surgery, didn't they?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So another surgery on Robertson's knee, and that's not going to be good because, you know, when he, we've already seen all the numbers on his differentials. You wrote it in your little piece about him. And, you know, he was going to be an early favorite for Defensive Player of the Year. That was going to be the reason their defense was going to be second in the league to me, behind only a team that we'll talk about next, I think. Mm-hmm. And then, it really, with him off the floor, offensively they can get more things going, but they don't have anyone that can really just stand their ground and guard somebody besides Paul George.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that is in the back seat, on the back burner of the most interesting part of this team to me, and that's Dennis Schroeder.
Yeah.
I think Dennis Schroeder might be the most interesting wrinkle to this Oklahoma City team.
Definitely.
It's not a stretch to say, and it sounds crazy that we reached this point after all the numbers you've said about Carmelo Anthony. This is the point where Dennis Schroeder could be a more valuable player than Melo was last year for the Thunder.
Definitely.
I want him to be the bench guy. I want him to be like the guy that ignites the second unit and gives Russ just 10 minutes of rest, 12 minutes of rest a night. I mean, if Russ can just buy that, then he might just be better off resting a couple games, right? Because then OKC will have a lot more energy for the playoffs, which is what it has, they have fallen apart. Both years, that's an underrated part element of the two. Both of the years that Russ averaged a triple-double, his wheels fell completely off in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I mean, he had one good game, right, against Utah last year, that 40-something game, 40-something shot game, that he was just Batman and no one was standing in his way. But, Aaron, the most interesting part of this with Schroeder is last year when Westbrook was sat on the bench, he sat on the bench for 1,000 minutes. He was not on the court. The Thunder's pace dropped to 93.
Wow.
Obviously, it's Raymond, that big, chunky Raymond Felton out there running the court and stuff. And you know, it's their second unit, so it's understandable. They want Billy Donovan uses the second unit to run his sets because he can't get Russ to run his sets, correct? So, I mean, it's understandable. But this year, if Schroeder is filling in for 15 of those minutes when Russ is on the bench, then you have someone that can elevate your pace to 100, get it back up to – you know, league average, or get it back up to the top in the league. You know, pace isn't everything. There are teams that run only 95, 92 possessions a game, like Utah, that are really good.
Exactly.
But Oklahoma City's athletes, Jeremy Grant, all those guys, are better off running. And Schroeder is going to help that. I think this Thunder team will be so much better offensively without Melo. Their defense, when Robertson comes back, should be January, should be half the season. If he's right, if he's good, he should lift them a couple more ranks than what they were. But I like this team's depth. I just don't like their shooting. And I think that you might agree with that. Their shooting is non-existent. That's why they got to hope that Westbrook actually did improve this shot. That's why they got to hope that George replicates that 40-something percent from three. Shot really good off of catch and shoots from three last year, like magnificent compared to his Indiana days. So that's got to replicate. And Steven Adams has to be knocking on, like, I don't want to say all NBA center because there's too many and it's hard to get to that level, but all-star. He has to be like, oh, is Steven Adams an all-star this year? It's got to be something like that.
Yeah. Good luck scoring on this team, you know, even without Robertson, because you look at their bench rotation. Schroeder has had a downward trend in his defensive ratings, defensive numbers. His defensive win shares were at a career high in 16-17 at 2.5. Last season was actually his second lowest after his rookie year in terms of defensive win shares. So if he can get back to being super committed on the defensive end like he has before, he's got the quick hands, quick feet. You know, he blocked the heck out of Trae Young earlier today. You know, he has great instincts on that end of the ball. He just has to be committed. And we talked a little bit earlier about, you know, effort compared to just defensive IQ. He has IQ. He just needs to put in the effort. And he's demonstrated that before. Yeah. So if he can get back to doing that, he should be a force on that end.
I wish they had a way to, like, Corey Brewer is a joker in the league. But
yeah,
I wish they had a way to get him, you know, because, like, he did provide a spark.
True.
I don't particularly like the guy on the court, but he did play 28 minutes a night in his 18 games with the Thunder. And, you know, that something that could be missed because he's willing to take threes. He shoots league average from three. They don't have enough league average shooters. Patterson has to not stink. Yeah. You know, it has to come down to that stuff. I mean, because Jeremy Grant's not shooting. When he does, he's not good. Right. Alex Abrines can't be on the court to shoot because he can't defend me.
Yeah.
So, you know, Terrence Ferguson's got to be the guy to really be like a big time sophomore for them.
Hopefully he is, but I'm so excited to see what this bench unit can do, at least defensively. I mean, if they have, hypothetically speaking, they have Dennis out there along with Jeremy Grant. Maybe they had Nerlens Noel out there. I don't know if Nerlens Noel can play with Adams, but I mean, Nerlens Noel or... I mean, if you put Nerlens Noel with someone like maybe Jeremy Grant is in the front court, Patrick Patterson, I mean, they could really shut some guys down. So, I mean, they have a high ceiling on that end. But yeah, it is about the three-pointers. It is about the offense. That's going to be the key for them. But something interesting, though, from the Thunder last season that caught my eye was they didn't get blown out that many times last season. You look at the loss totals. Their first 10 losses were by 9 points or less, and their last 5 losses were by 4 points or less. So that just shows you that it was a lot of late-game execution. I watched some highlights, some breakdowns of some of their sets they're running at the end of the games. And I'm sure you heard of it. They had that Hawk set, that Hawk cut set. They ran almost every game. That was their kind of bread and butter. They went to that every time. But with Melo and George and Westbrook, it was a power struggle. And we see this every time a lot of dominant players come together, especially at the end of games. It's like, your turn, my turn. Do I go now? Is it your turn to create this play? They suffered a lot of that, and it cost them some games. Of course, there's some flukes in there, like the Timberwolves game, the Wiggins like half-court shot. That was crazy. And funny story about that, I was watching that game with some friends, and, you know, League Pass was having some issues, and it was lagging as it usually does. Right as he was about to pull up for that shot, it literally, like, lagged so bad, it, like, paused the whole feed.
Oh, wow.
And I missed the shot, like, right as he's pulling up. So it's just, it's one of those things. I mean, you know, in life and in basketball, a lot of it just comes down to right place, right time. And the Thunder were in the right place at the right time at the end of games. So if they can turn that around, they can get a few more wins out of that. I mean, even if they miss Roberson for a lot of games, they can still, I could still see them getting a number three seed in the conference if other things kind of work out well. And of course, you have to see how much time Westbrook misses, but I mean, that's what Shooter's there for. If Shooter can do what he did today, dropping like 24, 4 rebounds and 6 assists, I mean, they'll be okay. They'll be able to keep float without him. So yeah, they have the depth for sure.
So there is one, I think the one area, the one specific action that they will miss Carmelo in is the Hawk action, where it's basically a screen where the one wing slot comes over, and that's usually Paul George. Actually, it always is Paul George.
Yeah.
Comes around the baseline, around the screen, and then catches the ball, and then he initiates his own action from there. It's just a lot of moving parts. But Melo was always a beneficiary. He would always either get a switch on a mid-range jumper, like a little pick, like a pop shot on a off Paul George's pass, or he would basically have a layup because the defense is so focused on George coming around that he draws maybe a defender and a half. Like he won't completely draw a double, but the guy is so focused on watching him that Melo slips free a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it also helped Westbrook because when you have to worry about Paul George coming around there in the flex action, when you have to worry about Melo and throwing a guy at him, Russ was able to penetrate. And I broke this down on YouTube. I mean, there's a lot of times where Westbrook gets easily to the rim off that. So they'll have to figure out a way to recreate that because Melo was an integral part of it. But I don't have any doubts that they will. And I was going to say something about them. Oh, you alluded to it. You said that they didn't get blown out a bunch.
Yeah.
I know you know the chart that I make where it shows all the teams, offense rating, defense rating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So the reason OKC was last year, all through their struggles, they were 500, below 500. They were always in that, like, good category because they didn't get blown out. Last year, up until December 1st, so the first month of the season, they were under 500, 9-12. At that point, their net rating was +3. Like, they were still beating opponents soundly, but the problem was they would lose in the fourth quarters.
Yep.
Same problem as Denver, man. And same, man, is it just a Northwest Division thing? Minnesota had that problem. You know, Denver habitually has that problem. And now the Thunder, with Russell Westbrook and Paul George, seems like they're going to be a power struggle, as you said, but yeah, this team should be better. The bottom line is they're going to be better than last year unless Russ finally misses a game. That's an underrated part of it. He has not missed a – I think he's missed a couple for rest.
Yeah.
I don't think he's missed any for injury. I don't think – maybe he went like a I'm sore, please just keep me out, Billy, type of injury, but not a significant one. This could be the year. It's rare you see someone with that – fiery playstyle play 82 games times 3. So
true. So I mean they're in a good position this season. Good thing they do have this balanced roster and they have guys locked in because they can't make many moves from here on out. They have $148 million committed to next season. Not this season, next season. So it's all about how far they can go with this core. Don't know if there's enough firepower to compete with Golden State. They still fall a little bit short in that regard, but I mean, against the other 99% of the league, they should be fine. They should be able to hold their own, win a solid amount of games. 50-plus is in the realm of possibility, so Can't wait to see what these guys bring to the table, especially when Westbrook and Roberson are healthy. There's a lot that these guys can do together. So we alluded to this next team quite a bit from earlier, and that's the Utah Jazz, who had a very surprisingly good season. We talked about the pace earlier. Pretty slow team when it comes to, you know, how many possessions per game. It's 95.7 possessions per 48 minutes. That's 25th in the league, but they have Favors and Gobert there, and that makes sense why they would be kind of slow. But this team had, I mean, talk about a turnaround. They were 17-26, you know, at this certain part of the season. Gobert came back shortly after, and they finished with 48 wins. You know, they were, you know, in the top half of the Western Conference. It's a testament to their resiliency and excellent system led by Quinn Snyder. The GM poll was earlier, I think it was last week, and I think Quinn Snyder was voted as being, you know, one of the three best coaches in the league, and for good reason. I mean, his system works, and even with...
If you give Quinn Snyder San Antonio... No, not San Antonio, because Pop's dominant. If you give Quinn Snyder Portland's roster, man, like... That's an offensive genius. Stotts is pretty good too, but Snyder is an offensive genius, and I would love to see him with a dominant top 10 scorer like Damian Lillard. There's nothing. It's just not going to happen. That's not what Utah has. They're not going. They have no way of getting it because they're going to be too good to be in draft position. So yeah, you're right. I mean, Quinn Snyder definitely deserves that praise.
And there's so much success here because, you know, specifically their system is built on advantage basketball. That's all about setting your players up so they're in a position to make a play, and they have an advantage on the defense. So, you know, moving the ball, getting guys closing out, you know, attacking a closeout, or, you know, having somebody off balance, or, you know, having somebody commit a late rotation, something like that, from just moving the ball. And it all works together so well. And I don't think it would work as well if Donovan didn't blow up on the scene like he did. I mean, he came in and he immediately got 17 shot attempts a game in 33 minutes a game. And that's not very common. And that's partly because of Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood is very underwhelming and he got shipped out eventually, which opened the door for Mitchell. And it's also because of the rest of the team. You know, Utah's not known for having explosive scores. You know, Rubio's not explosive scorer, Gobert, Joe Ingles. These are guys that score in specific situations. They're not just going to create their own shot out of nothing. So Donovan's skill set fit right into this team. He couldn't have landed to a better team. I mean, the team needed him. He needed this team to have the most opportunity. And it all came together so well. So I love how Mitchell developed on this team so quickly. And it goes back to the rest of this roster going down the list. The biggest strength of this roster is balance and depth. They had seven players last season average 11 points per game or more. That's pretty incredible. 11 points a game is pretty good. And you have seven guys that can do that. You're going beyond the starting lineup. You're going too deep into your bench at that point. You know, with when you have guys like when you have, let's see, I'm blanking on his name here. Crowder. You have Crowder on the bench.
Oh, yeah.
That can do that as well. Yeah. It just works wonders for your team. So depth is there. The continuity is there. You can see that management is committed to that by banking on the guys that are already there, giving Favors and excellent extensions. It's all about what they have now. It's just capitalizing on it. So if Gobert's healthy this time around, they can go a long way. They can definitely go a long way. Their defense is great. Their offense is okay, even though it's not elite, but it doesn't have to be. You know, defense is that good. So,
yeah,
a lot of these guys can do together with the system and the personnel. Works together perfectly.
It all comes down to Gobert. Rudy Gobert, their best player, their franchise star, who doesn't even want to acknowledge being the star because that's not him. He's quiet. Really the Nikola Jokic of Denver in a completely opposite way, which is awesome. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I love that Gobert is he embraces being the underrated offensive player because he does everything needed offensively. He that vertical spacing of his, man.
Yeah.
And with the coaching of Quinn Snyder, I think that if he had like a below average NBA head coach, like if he had Tyronn Lue or someone that we don't deem as a good talent developer, then, you know, I would struggle to see how he's going to be a better playmaker. But for him to be able to catch off the roll and now make passes, it's going to be epic. And playing with arguably the best passer in the division, I guess still Ricky Rubio is probably the best passer in the division. He's awesome. It's Chris Paul-esque what he can do with the ball. But I do believe that Utah's offense, Aaron, can get up to like the top 12 this year. I wouldn't bet on it, but one like piece of low hanging fruit is that Gobert off of Ricky Rubio's passes last year. I'm on the passes dashboard right now. Off of Ricky Rubio's passes, only shot 48% from the field. Now, by shooting, we mean obviously finishing at the rim because that's what Gobert does. But only 48% for someone that consistently leads the league in field goal percentage. Off of Donovan Mitchell, he shot 75%.
Wow.
I look for Rubio to be a lot better with chemistry matters with Gobert this year. So I'm definitely looking forward to seeing them together again because they struggled at first all the way until January, and then they really kicked it into like high gear, and Rubio was awesome for them. And Rubio's shot is definitely looking improved what we've seen in the playoffs as well.
That's the whole key here, and I can't wait to see how the rest of this roster shakes out. They have so much depth here, and it's going to be a challenge, as I talked about when I discussed Miami and the division preview. This is also the same issue that Denver suffers a little bit with. But when you run 10, 12 guys deep, it presents a challenge in getting guys the opportunity that they need, particularly the bench players. The starters will get their minutes, but when you go from there, you know, Cephalosha is still here. You got Crowder. You got Exum. You go down the list. You have some solid players here. So getting the minutes. Royce O'Neal is there. He's been a solid contributor. He's developing quite nicely. Grayson Allen was a draft pick of theirs. He's already looking like he's a good player. Putting in more than 1 year at college would do that for a draft pick. You know, coming in and being a nice contributor off the bat. It works very well for them. And it's going to be nice for the progression and how everybody works together. When you have a great depth there, a great lineup that works well together, it creates this great, I would say it creates a really good culture there. You don't have guys that feel like they're above everybody else. You don't have guys that feel like they're kind of, you know, behind the eight ball. Everybody's just kind of in the same realm, realm of opportunity. So that works really well for teamwork, the continuity, the system, and how guys fit together. So fantastic to see that from the Jazz. I'm just questioning how Mitchell is going to build on this because, you know, when a guy comes out in his rookie year, he explodes, they're not ready for him. It's different from being an established player and having guys game plan for you, you know, priority number one every night. So how would you see Mitchell developing here as defenses are accustomed to what he brings to the table every night?
It's an awesome question because I was about to get to it and you read my mind. And this is controversial. I'm going to blow back a little bit here. Okay. But, all right, so people are comparing this to Victor Oladipo and how Oladipo is now going to have all the attention on him from that 1 year. Well, guess what, guys? Like, just hold on, pump the brakes a little bit. Victor Oladipo's campaign from last year is easily more replicable. Like, he's going to be able to do that again more easier than Donovan because he's a better player and it's more it's just more apt to replicate because the stuff that he does, he's faster, he is a better shooter, especially off the dribble. My God, Oladipo has gotten so deadly. Like, this guy might be a top 10 player now, and I don't want to throw hyperbolic stuff out here, but I know that preseason game is just preseason, but he looks so determined and ready, even more than last year. But obviously, this is not Indiana podcast. But I say that to compare it to Donovan, that You know, I'm going to be – I would be surprised if Donovan does have the same season. I would be surprised if Donovan doesn't struggle a little bit, because not only are people more tuned in and dialed in and everything about him now, but he's going against better defenses in the West. He's going against, like, better teams in the West. The West only got better. His division still stayed the same in strength, but – you know, I don't think that Donovan Mitchell is going to be a 25-point-per-game guy. I don't think he's going to be an instant star this year. Definitely, like, I see a lot of people, which apparently folks forget what conference he plays in, thinking that he could be an all-star. There's no way. Like, there's just no way. If Damian Lillard and Mike Conley consistently got snubbed, and just knocked off because there's too many guys, there's just no conceivable direction of him getting an all-star bid this year. And it's not hate coming from me. It's not because I like Ben Simmons. It's not any of that.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that where he plays. If you put the Jazz in the Eastern Conference, this team is a 55-win team or more or better, and they're a 3 seed. It's just the fact that they're going against tougher guys out there, and, you know, the Lakers are better now. They play them 3 or 4 times a year. I really am not seeing the Jazz over 50 wins or Donovan Mitchell being the superstar talent. He might be in 5 years, but this is year 2. People need to chill out just a little bit, just a tad bit.
I would agree with that. He's come on the scene strong, but, you know, we need to see sustained success before we grant a guy a status of, you know, top 20, whatever, top 20, 25 player.
Because it's only bad for him, because you saw what happened with Lonzo. You saw what happened to Lonzo his first year. His dad thought that he was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
And you know, it kind of left a bitter taste in everyone's mouth, including my mouth, who I didn't think Lonzo was amazing to begin with. But just after hearing his dad consistently say that, obviously just naturally some expectations creep into my mind, and they shouldn't have, but they did. Mm-hmm. And I was left a little bit sour. And if we expect Donovan Mitchell to be a top 20 player this year, we're going to be disappointed, and I don't want that. I want the expectations to be real for Jazz.
Realistic. I'm with you, man.
Yeah.
So, should be another nice campaign. We just got to make sure we don't get too...
I want to ask you.
Yeah.
Let's see if you agree with me here. I think Utah might have the third highest floor in the conference. Like, barring injury, let's just say hypothetically, like, everyone in the league plays 75 games, so there's no injuries for the entire year. I think the lowest the Jazz could be is probably 45 wins. That's probably the lowest, they 44, 43. I mean, that's out of the playoffs, so I don't want to go that low. But, like, this team could not be below a 6 seed for me. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think they're too good.
I would agree with that, and it goes back to the depth proposition. When you have guys that are all kind of on an equal level, equal footing, equal contributors, aside from Gobert, nobody would take a huge, like, kind of contribution away from the team, you know. But if we're looking at someone like, you know, this is someone in a completely different conference, just different situation, but a team like Charlotte, you know, you take away Kemba, the floor drops in.
Oh, yeah.
So that creates a wide range of outcomes for them. But with the Jazz, you know, there's not a lot of fluctuation there. Indiana's the same way. You take away one guy, he doesn't hurt the team too badly, because they're so well-balanced, and they contribute so much to the team fairly equally, but still in their own way. So I'm with you on that one. You know, aside from, you know, Golden State or whatever, like, they're going to be consistent.
Golden State and Houston, if the lowest they could be, if just everything went wrong, their talent still gives them 55 wins.
Yeah.
Chris Paul and James Harden, because remember, we're expecting optimal health here.
Right.
I'm talking about internally, if everything goes sour and Melo ruins that team again, I would expect those two teams, the Warriors and Rockets, to hit 55 with ease. Can't say the same about Utah. Can't say the same about Oklahoma City. Or the Lakers' floor is 40. So we know that. But, yeah, Utah's floor is probably 45. But they also have a low ceiling because they can't score as optimally as Houston or Golden State. So
that's the thing.
The highest they're going to be is 50, four wins. So, I mean, yeah, they have a low range because of what you said, equal balanced roster.
That's what it's all about, man. And they're on the upward swing, but, you know, there's another team here, the last team in the division. They're over-under. Their projections have gotten a lot lower. That's the Portland Trail Blazers. Last time I checked, over-under win projection is about 42.5, and that's quite a bit lower than last season. They won 49 games last season, and I think this is a lot because most of us would say they had kind of a fluky season last season, a fluky run. I mean, the last 23 games, they won 17 out of the last 23 games. It's really not about how you start a season, it's how you finish. Just ask the Utah Jazz. It's all about how you finish. So they got home court advantage in the Western Conference playoff race, and it was weird how they achieved that because we're used to Portland being this fantastic offensive team, but Dame and CJ can't guard anybody, so their defense struggles. It was actually the opposite. They had an 8th-ranked defense and a 15th-ranked offense. That was really surprising for me because, you know, Damian Lillard is a fantastic scorer, 27 points a game again last season. CJ, we know about his profile, but it didn't really make a difference in the end. They got slammed, you know, and by the Pelicans. You know, Damian Lillard was double-teamed, and it kind of shined a light on one of their big weaknesses here. They don't have that level of depth and like two-way players that Utah and Denver and those guys have. You know, it's Damian Lillard, it's CJ McCollum, and then it's kind of like you look around a little bit and it's like, well, who else is going to give us that punch? Who else is going to contribute for us? And, you know, if only they had somebody to rely on, you know, coming off the bench, if like Denver's had last season, Indiana this season with Tyreek Evans, you know, even Denver this season with Isaiah Thomas, they don't have anybody like that that could come in and sustain their level of play. I don't think Seth Curry's going to do that for them. I don't think Pat Connaughton's going to do that for them. That's not in their DNA. They don't do those kind of things on the court. So it's going to be rough. And we talked about this, Shane, before we came on tonight. And you said that, you know, two teams are probably going to fall out of this race. And this is the second team other than Minnesota for the reasons I just laid out there. So it's not looking good for them going into this next season. But you agreed that last season was kind of a fluke for them, especially how it ended?
I think the ending wasn't a fluke because you can easily duplicate the wins or you duplicate the offense from Dame and CJ because Dame had a lot of games where he was Mr. Fourth Quarter. What's his name? Tap the watch every time he hits a shot.
Yeah.
Dame the wristwatch. Yeah. I thought that was Isaiah Thomas. I guess they both had it. But,
I think Isaiah stole it.
Yeah, IT stole it, and now he was a one-hit wonder.
Yep.
We didn't even mention him, really, in Denver. But
Oh, no.
The thing is about Portland, don't think the defense is going to be that good this year.
No.
You lose Ed Davis, man. Ed Davis, one of the best defensive rebounding bigs and offensive rebounding in general bigs. I would love him on my team. He's an energy guy, glue guy. He's pretty much an everything guy, and you can really tell that he's going to be missed because, like, an hour after he left in free agency, Dame and CJ went to his aid on Twitter. They wanted him back in Portland, and, you know, Neil O'Shea didn't re-sign him that he could have, but Ed's going to go to Brooklyn, right? And Brooklyn's going to have a heck of a guy in the interior off the bench. And, you know, Portland, their strengths are they don't turn the ball over because they're not stupid. You know, they're not one of these stupid teams that just slings the ball around a million miles per hour, a million times a game, because that's not what they do. Like Philly, I wouldn't say Philly's stupid, but they were just reckless with the ball.
Terrible, yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing, but that's just how they play. Mm-hmm. But Portland and their turnover percentage, they only turn the ball over 13.6% of their possessions, which was tied for seventh in the league, behind San Antonio, Indiana, Toronto, Charlotte, Minnesota, and Dallas, really well-coached teams. Every one of those has a really good coach, and that's what it comes down to. Exactly. Terry Stotts was awesome. And Terry Stotts has even said that he's going to put in more stuff with Portland's offense this year.
Nice.
Which they needed it because, like, Yusuf Nurkic didn't come on until very late in the season. He was awful for a couple months, I would say. About 3 months, he was awful in my eyes. And the weakness for this team is the inverse of what I just said. They don't pass enough. This is the only team in the NBA, Aaron, the only team that did not assist on 50% of their buckets. Even the Thunder were 4% higher. So it's a big drop-off. It's a big drop-off. OKC, 53.5% assist percentage, which means for the audience that 53.5% of your buckets were assisted. Yeah. Portland, 49.6%. Damian Lillard, for as good as a playmaker as he's trying to be and as he's becoming, he can't do it all. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think they're going to miss Shabazz Napier. And I don't like what they did. Seth Curry is awesome when he's healthy and when he's good. Mm-hmm. But he's not going to be the guy that is really running that point guard role. I mean, he can do it. He did it in Dallas for a couple stretches with Yogi Ferrell. But, heck, I would have liked Yogi Ferrell on this team. Someone that can really just create off the pick and roll.
They just need that guy to come in and supplement and just keep things running. And you know,
it's not even about scoring the ball. It's about keeping things organized. And exactly. You know who they rely on that? They rely on that for Evan Turner.
And
that's
point
not,
forward.
That's not good.
No.
It's just not good, man. And I don't think this team has a high ceiling. It was easy last year, and easy is probably not the right word, but I'm going to use it. It was easy last year to just go on a big win streak and say, oh, this is our team. We're so good now. I mean, we won 49 games, but guess what? You have the best player in history coming to your conference, and he's only 33 years old. Yeah. And the thing is, when LeBron is out there, you know, Portland might win. Portland probably will win that opening night game on Thursday night, next Thursday in Portland. But I could see the Lakers taking all the next three from them. And they're just going to lose a lot of games this year because the West, as we said, is better. I would even say New Orleans is probably a tier or two above Portland for me. Portland is the Western Conference Wizards. And I'm not hating on the management or anything because they did what they needed to do. They have a lot of money tied up in these guys.
Yep.
And, you know, Nurkic signed that deal. I believe he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he signed it last year.
Yeah, so it's just all your money's tied up in the wrong stuff except for Dame. And I'm hoping Dame sticks around, but this team is not a playoff team, in short.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to sum it up. I hate how they spent their money the last few years. You know, they gave Myers Leonard that deal. It started there. You know, they gave Evan Turner that money. They gave Allen Crabbe that money. And they just drained so much of their resources into, like, average players. At best, you know, Myers Leonard isn't even an average player. You know, he's very below average. He's a stretch big that doesn't shoot well. You know, that's a problem. So, I mean, they just didn't hit on everybody except Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. And that's why they find themselves kind of a little bit lower on the totem pole here. Not a high ceiling. You know, you need more than Dame and CJ in the Western Conference, especially in the Northwest Division. You got to have more than just those guys to be able to come in and sustain it. You know, someone else they can rely on. You know, the Pelicans, you know, have another guy. I mean, they're not in this division, but, you know, Denver has three guys they can come in and, you know, just rely on. I know the Jazz have like pretty much the whole roster because they're so deep. You know, Minnesota last season had three guys so they can rely on. You need a third guy, and we wouldn't say Nurkic is that guy you can rely on to come in and really give you timely buckets. So that's their downfall. It's probably going to be the same thing here again. And, you know, I wish them the best because Damian Lillard is one of my favorite players. 26-4-6 last season, first team All-NBA. He did so much for this team, continues to be a fantastic leader and an example for them. But it's not going to get any better for him. And, you know, the Warriors are going to run over these guys, the Rockets, you know, those elite teams. It's going to be rough. So hats off to these guys. But,
Fans might think I'm overstating Ed Davis a bit. And maybe I am, but he played 1,400 minutes. That's still a lot. 1,400 minutes is a lot. That's the same as Pat Connaughton.
That's a big piece.
That's more than Mo Harkless.
Yeah.
And he, when he was on the court, 103.9 defensive rating, which would be top 8. So that's right where they were. You know, when he didn't play, they were a little bit lower than that. So maybe they can make up for it, but I'm worried about their rebounding a little bit. Yusuf Nurkic has a lot on his plate now. I've heard that Zach Collins can really step in and take over that role as well, but I'm skeptical. I mean, I like Zach Collins, and he's a better shooter, obviously. Right. But I'm just skeptical that, like, Ed Davis, I guess it's because he was on my favorite team. The Lakers had a couple of years or maybe 1 year of Ed Davis, and everything rolled. It was a well-oiled machine when he was in the game because he understands his role. He doesn't want too much, and he plays really hard defense. And I think that their defense is going to be league average. I could see their defense slipping below like the likes of Washington or somewhere around there to where, you know, it's not top 10. Because when you get in the top 10, you're talking about like Spurs level.
Right.
I think the Spurs will be around 10th this year, 10th or 8th, somewhere around there. But yeah, they're just not going to be that good on that end of the floor. Alper Kaminu would have to be healthy and he would have to play a lot of minutes as like the four.
So. Yeah. That's the key, the four, because he can't really move his feet that well anymore to guard the threes and those guys. One last thing here on Portland before we kind of wrap it up. You know, Ed Davis, man, like his offensive rebounding percentage, you know, percentage of the team's missed field goals, did he rebound? I mean, that was in a 94th percentile last season at 12.6%. And 91st percentile in defensive rebounding rate. That was at 25.8%. So a couple of numbers there to further drive home this point that he was very valuable for them last season. So they need somebody else to fill the void, hopefully.
You're right. You're so right on that. And I want to be clear, though, because it's something that I've really been thinking about this summer. And I just heard it reiterated on a podcast the other day I listened to, like, I don't want to be so negative on these teams just because they lost like their seventh or eighth best guy, because well, like course, yeah. once because the league is all about top four talent,
mm-hmm.
top five, your starting lineup, like the Philadelphia 76ers. It didn't matter who their eighth best player was because mm-hmm. their starting five was the best in basketball.
Yep.
And like I think that we need to stick to that ideology more. But like Ed Davis is not going to make or break them being a good team. They're going to be a good team, but it's just he might drop them three or four wins. And that is what we're talking about. We're not talking about, not talking about Portland being a lottery team because they are a lottery team. We're talking about them being down there because you lose three wins.
Yeah. And that's why I made a huge deal about the Rockets losing, you know, Ariza and Bamute, not because they're, you know, superstar players or you know anything like that. It's just the margins are so slim in this conference. Every little bit helps, and we saw last season that the number of games that separated Minnesota, which barely got in, from Portland, who was the three seed, was two wins, 47 to 49. So I mean, you just said three or four wins. That's the playoffs right there. That takes it completely out of the picture. So I mean, it's all about the little things, and that makes a huge difference in this division because it's so competitive, because it's so hardcore and you know, just devastating there. So
I got to ask you, did you see Karl Towns in that interview with it was a random person and gave him an interview on Media Day. That girl asked him, so is this team still a playoff team? And, you know, I understand that he has to say yes, but he can't just say, I don't know. But the way he said it was like, of course, like there's no question. Like, come on now. there was a question last year. You had a play-in game to make the playoffs, and you almost lost it.
Yeah, I mean, he said it because he had to say it. If he said no, we would have just thrashed the guy. You know, social media would have had him on a platter. So it just it's just the funny how the game works. But Shane, I would love to talk more about this with you, man. But got to wrap it up here. That's gonna do it for the Northwest Division and overall division previews here. So we're going to take a little bit of a break next week, and then in 2 weeks we're going to get back to it because the regular season will be in action. We're going to be right back to the action here as well. So Shane, great talk as usual, great information from you, man. Appreciate you coming on for your fourth appearance. I would say this is your best one yet. It's just going up from here.
Thanks, man. I look forward to the fifth appearance. Maybe that's before Christmas. It'd be fun. It'd be fun. We got 2 months before the holidays creep in on us. So
yeah, We're both going to get back to work here. We both have a lot we want to get off our chest and get out for the public before the season starts. Yeah. It's coming up very quickly, rapidly approaching. So everybody be sure to follow BC Basketball 2 on Twitter and Instagram. We're going to have a lot more updates and things coming your way. We're over at bcbasketball.info online, so you can check out our website. Redesign is up. Have a few articles up. I'll be putting up one tomorrow, I believe, Monday. So be sure to check that out. And we have a lot more coming your way. So thanks, everybody, for tuning in. As usual, we break it down $1 at a time at Biz Casual Basketball. Season's right around the corner. Can't wait for it to start. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll be coming at you again with a lot of great content real soon.